All right. Hello and welcome to the Seven Figure Agency Podcast, where we're interviewing highly successful digital marketing agencies from across the country. Today, I'm super excited to be joined by Josh Stockel. Josh, thanks so much for joining us.
Yeah, thanks for having me. Love being here.
So Josh has grown his agency to over $118,000 in monthly recurring revenue, focusing on the land clearing industry. And he's had accelerated growth over the last year. He was telling me he went from almost like 43K to over 100K. And so this should be really interesting. We'll talk about his journey and how he's grown. So I guess without stealing your thunder, tell us, what's the current lay of the land? Approximately how many clients, how much recurring revenue? Like what does it look like today?
Yeah, so today we are at 118,000 monthly recurring revenue. We have about 60 to 65 clients, 13 employees, and yeah, one happy dog that likes to sit next to me all day long.
Awesome. So a really great business, a thriving business. Take us back a little bit. So like you've been at this game for quite some time. And I love the accelerated growth in the last year. But tell us about like how you got into the digital marketing agency business in the first place.
Yeah. So that's a fun story. I won't take up too much time on it. But I was the president CEO of a local chamber of commerce. And I had owned a pie shop right before that and sold it. I, moving into the chamber job, thought it was actually going to be more pay, but my take home, it was just a mess. I didn't do my math right. Typical entrepreneur. I just jumped in. And I just needed to figure out how to make more money. And so I started thinking, what could I do on the side that I actually enjoy? And I started thinking about what the pie shop we owned. I loved the marketing aspect. And so I was like, maybe there's a way I could do some marketing. Started doing social media marketing for a couple of local restaurants and then quickly found out you can't scale that by yourself. Mm-hmm. So then I started Googling around like, what are marketing things you can do at scale? And then sure enough, Rank and Rent business model popped up, fascinated me. I was like, what? I can own a website and rent it to somebody? So learned SEO, learned web design, and then it just went off from there. I was like, you know, Rank and Rent is fine, but I really like working with real clients. And so that's just how we got into it.
Fascinating. So you started in a pie shop. We're going to hear that story one day. We got into the Chamber of Commerce and then did Rank and Rent and kind of developed from there. Talk to us about like the journey to 50K, because like we got to know each other through the acquisition of Agency Collective, which was a really fun experience for us. And we got some amazing members from that community and some amazing talent. But talk to us about the kind of the journey to that first K and some of the things that helped to accelerate the growth.
Man, that was hard. That was a really hard process. So when I started my agency, we did your typical like cold call, and actually no cold call, cold text, cold email. I was like, I'll never do a cold call. And to this day, praise the Lord, I haven't had to do that. But we just really fumbled, and we were a generalist agency. We worked with all types of contractors. I kind of liked it and just kind of fumbled our way to the 30K mark. I had a prospecting method I called potty prospecting method. I mean, can you tell them a parent, right? Still saying potty. I would just send messages to guys. I remember looking at a roofer's thing and we just doom scroll in the bathroom, right? So I just remember seeing like a Facebook ad for a roofer. And I thought, well, this guy is wasting money on me because I'm not in the market to buy a roof. So I thought, I'm selling SEO, I'm selling web design. I'm sure there's a better way. So I reached out to him. I said, hey, you wasted your money on me. Great looking ad, but I just don't need a roof. And I'd hate for you to keep wasting money on people like me. I could actually show you a better way to get in front of more like 80% or more of your market. Would you be interested in hearing about that? And it was just enough to get for the guy to go, you piqued my interest. What are you doing? And then it just kind of made me realize, hey, I could do this method with a lot more guys. And so I started teaching Facebook who I wanted in front of me. And I just started hammering out roofers and plumbers, electricians, and I made it deliver Facebook ads because these guys were actually paying for marketing. So I wasn't just going into groups, hitting up everybody, which we all know, many of them just don't have the funds. And so I started growing from that zero mark to that 30K mark, kind of doing that method. It didn't cost me anything other than time. And then I got into Agency Collective. And now in that time period, I learned how to do ads like for my own agency. And so that helped us get from 30 to 50. And then I think for, we've been doing this 10 years, but somewhere in between all that time was a lot of this up and down, round and round roller coaster, right? I mean, we talk about it all the time in 7FA, but I was that guy where I was like, it's like, I just finally get ahead and then retention would fall and then get ahead and retention would fall. And I just could not figure out how to really scale this thing. So it wasn't until coming into 7FA and really thinking about all these other moving parts and pieces that made the huge change for us in our business.
So good. So the potting method, I think, is fascinating. Like you kind of trained, I want to see ads from local companies, and then you use that as a foot in the door. For the people that are interested in testing something like that out, I know you've got a whole training and you do weekly calls on this, yep. But like, how do you flip it from, hey, I just got your ad, you know, you're not qualified, to an actual sales opportunity?
Yeah. Well, we want to be careful not to just, hey, I do SEO. You want to stop doing ads, right? Like, it's, nobody wants to hear about what you sell. And so it was figuring out the system to get the right people in front of me and then saying the right message that piqued their interest. So we sell the end result. We don't talk about selling the services. So in my messaging was just real clear on that. Like, hey, I've got a better way than what you're doing, and I can get you in front of more of your city without wasting your advertising dollars. And then once they reached out and said, yeah, I'm interested to hear more, I made them a personalized video showing them how we're killing it in the SEO space and how they're not, how their clients or their competitors are killing it, and how we can help them surpass your competitors. And, you know, just did the whole 2-minute little quick audit, and it was enough, you know. And there's gonna be some who are like, oh, okay, never mind, I don't want it. But there were some who were like, I've never seen this before. No one's ever done a personalized video like that. Let's talk. And that's when we just started adding clients on that method. And so started figuring out, how can we do that at scale? So figuring, like, how can I get a VA to run the same method on their Facebook ad account? Because again, we're trying to get in front of the right type of client, not just any roofer, but or electrician or whatever, but the right ones. So who had a marketing budget, who are paying for marketing, so they believe in marketing, but probably just not getting a great ROI on it. And that was the idea.
Super good. Yeah. And there's a lot of wisdom in that statement, and that you want to look for people that already have shown the propensity to advertise, right? The hardest person to sell is someone that's not spending a dollar in advertising. Mm-hmm. And be like, hey, let me do your SEO, or let me do your pay-per-click, or let me, that is like squeezing, you know, juice out of a turnip, right? Yeah. Nothing's going to come out.
Yeah. That's what you're saying, like, this is what I want. Yeah, I want it. I want it. And they're like, what's the price? You're like, anything. Oh, I don't have any money. Okay. Well, that was a big waste of time. And so this whole like one-to-one method, especially when maybe 75% of them aren't qualified, is just a huge time suck. And so we've got to find a way to get in front of the right people. And how do we get in front of the right people who are ready to buy marketing at scale? And that's where the switch from like those other methods, one-to-one methods, kind of go by the wayside, and we start looking at the one-to-many methods like Facebook ads or organic stuff. That's just the better option.
Awesome. So hopefully super helpful. Like, be looking for people that are already spending on advertising, just that in and of itself, and be like prospecting and working with the people that are already spending money, right? It's a smart way to do that. Right. So I want to talk about the transition, right? So 43K, you kind of had your ups, your downs, and kind of like leveled out there. And then over the last year, you've had this explosive growth to, you know, almost 3x. Talk to us about some of the changes, some of the pivots, and some of the things that helped create that momentum.
Oh man, yes, huge changes. And the good part is they're all the changes you talk about in 7FA. So I just remember, and I know I've told you this before, but like, I just remember coming in a little lost, like, man, the coaching group I was a part of got bought out. I don't know who this group is. I don't know what they're doing. I don't even know if they're good, if their stuff works. And so I really kind of like stayed back for a while. I just didn't like the whole idea, right? Change. I just didn't like change. That's what it came down to. But I had a couple of friends that were in the group. So I found out who was in here. I was like, oh, I trust that guy. I like that guy. Okay, they're in here. So this must be pretty decent. And then I started poking around, looking at videos and kind of getting the idea. And I was like, okay, I see what y'all are doing, but I want to be a generalist agency. I like what I'm doing. You know, we've got some clients here that are in different industries. It would be weird to niche down and all that. So I had all the excuses to not niche down. And then I remember watching the March intensive from home. Actually, me and another guy that were in the group that moved into your group, were sitting on a couch together in his office watching the intensive. And I was just, you know, sort of paying attention, sort of not. And I remember you were doing the interview with all these new 7-figure earners, and you had each one kind of talk about what they had done. And I leaned over to my buddy and I said, watch, every guy who walks up has either started a podcast or written a book or both, has niched down. And I think I said one other thing. And sure enough, one after the other, all said the exact same thing. And in that moment, it was like, okay, I got to do this, man. I'm tired of this. Let's go. And I literally stopped listening to the sessions, and I built this logo and our company website on the couch before the session had ended that day. And that was the beginning. And we niched down. That was the big change. We niched down why we chose the Dirt World, which for us is land clearing, excavation, demolition, site prep. Why we chose that one was I started thinking through, all right, out of all the different companies we worked with, who have we had the most success with? Like, who have we really helped the most? And my other caveat was, or requirement was, who do you like talking to? Like, who do you just like working with? Because there's some industries I found just weren't a good fit personality wise. And it was just instant, like, the most successful companies we worked with were Dirt World guys, and I really enjoyed them. So I said, all right, now I've picked my niche. I'm going to go after that niche. And then just started like tightening up our offers. And then it was like, all right, now that we know our niche, we know our, we got, what's the language that's worked with these guys? What kind of funnel should we be building for these guys? What kind of offer should we put here? What kind of pricing, right? So the whole rest of the thing just kind of made sense. It started to fall into place. And so just kind of spent like a month just kind of fine tuning that. I mean, we're always fine tuning, but spent a month just kind of building all that out and getting it started. And that's just really, that was the number one biggest thing was niche offer. And then the second biggest one a couple months later was working on retention. That was what I finally identified my biggest issue I was having before was retention. We could sell, but we just weren't retaining a whole lot. So started going into the training like, all right, how do we get this thing figured out? How do we keep the back door closed? And so we started just going through the videos and the trainings and figuring out what are we doing well, but what are we not doing well? And then just made the changes and saw our retention jump up to like 95 to 97% on a regular basis. Now we have some months it's low and all that, but in general, we've seen a massive increase in that. So sales has increased and retention has increased. So therefore growth has increased, right?
Yeah, no doubt. So I love that. You're kind of resistant to the idea of going into a niche, having a centralized program. Like, I don't know about that. So all other agencies and seeing like, okay, obviously they've gotten to seven figures, like something is different here. And I love the fact that you walked us through kind of like what your thought process around selection of the niche was. Where a lot of people get stuck in your scenario where they've grown to like 40,000 plus, but it's already producing good income and they've already got a lot of clients, making the pivot and being like, okay, I'm going to keep these guys as long as I can, but I'm going to focus my new marketing in this new vertical. Yeah. And making the balance there, how did you make that work? And any tips for those agencies that are like, I want to go niche. I'm just, I'm too busy, like trying to keep what I have here going.
Yeah, that was a big hurdle we had to figure out. And I don't think I've heard a couple of guys do different things. For us, what we ended up doing was keeping that kind of like the parent company in place, like Blue Goat Marketing. And all of those clients in those verticals kind of still there and, you know, still get emails from that email account. But internal staff and what we do is it actually was a better move for them because when we improved our retention efforts, they were the recipients of that. They just didn't know it was under a new name. And so then the new agency, the new website and all that stuff has been for everything since. Right. So all of our advertising and our organic efforts are all tied to the land leads, Blue Goat Land Leads business. But we still have a handful of those clients who just stuck around and they know, some of them know about it. They see it online. And I think in their minds, they're just kind of like, hey, we've seen y'all improve what you're doing for us. Cool. As long as you just keep it going, you know, we're making money, then we don't mind sticking around with you guys. So we've just kind of had to, I thought there would be more pushback or more questions. We only had a handful that were like, hey, just, we're curious what this is all about. And it was fine.
So it's like, don't feel like you've got to burn the boat. Like if you got clients, keep those clients, retain those clients, create a world-class experience. You're just creating a new division of the company.
Right.
That's like, we're going to focus on this industry now.
Correct.
Keep serving those guys. Just all your new marketing is trying to attract the others. The other, I think, place where people that make this transition get stuck is, well, I'm still getting opportunities outside the niche. How did you handle that? You still take those clients or you say, hey, I just want to put the blinders on. In your case, how did you address those situations?
Yeah. So our rule is we're not taking them on unless they are like a referral and they know who we are, right? They're just like, hey, we just want to work with y'all because we know you have and okay. Then fine, come on in. But we aren't advertising to those guys. If somebody comes in through our ads who's not a great fit and we don't know them, they don't really know us, we're not even going to mess with it. We just move them on and just tell them, hey, we're just not a great fit. But again, like I said, if it's like a friend of a friend who's like, hey, I've been having great success with them. I know you don't quite fit their niche, but come on anyway. And they're like, yeah, I know you guys don't really work with me, but I really want to work with y'all. Okay, come on in.
Love that. I think that's super helpful for people that might be overthinking this, that like, oh, you could still take those clients if you want, and you could just be a little more choosy, right? Yeah. And I know some people are like, you know, I'm going to charge more for the generalist prospects that come into my world and make sure that it's a retainer-based thing, and in which case I'll say no to some, but occasionally, if it's a good referral, somebody really wants to do something, you can still take that in business while directionally focusing going forward.
I would say the one thing that we did make clear was, though, you are going to come into our new pricing. Yes. So we're not going to give you what those guys were getting back in the day because we're actually more expensive now that we've niched down. Our offering is a little stronger, bigger, robust. And so I do tell them you come in, they're going to have to fall in line with our service offering, because that just makes sense internally with all of our teams and our tasks and stuff like that. We just don't want to now create like a different type of service like the old days that doesn't fit. So that is our one like caveat.
Love it. So and I definitely want to get into the program and kind of how you package that. But before we go there, so you've got this generalist agency doing 40K. You got a bunch of different clients and a bunch of different verticals. You decide, okay, we're gonna work with land clearing companies. I've already got some examples. I've already got some case studies. What was the parlay that you used to go from that seed list of, you know, handful of clients to the next five, or maybe even the next handful that you were like, okay, I want to go after this vertical in a more aggressive way?
What do you mean in terms of the marketing aspect, or like just the thought process behind it?
It actually worked. Yeah. How did you land those next? They knew you as your general agency. The ones that you wound up getting after that were in the niche.
Yeah. So we are big on ads. We didn't really have an organic thing going on. We're just actually right now in the last 6 months been working on that. Okay. And it's definitely growing, but we've been heavy on Facebook ads and TikTok ads. So for us, it was kind of an easy switch on that part. We were able to go, all right, well, we've been running ads at all. Now let's tweak them. So I changed our video, our creative out, our language out, and then we used the same system we've been doing. Just now we were targeting a very specific, you know, avatar. And then it was like, we've already cleaned up our go high level. So all the automations now have language that are just for Dirt World guys. So then it was just kind of an easy switch once we made those changes.
So straight up Facebook or Meta advertising, a little bit of TikTok in there, laser messaging, speaking directly to that land clearing prospect, bringing them in the funnel, converting. And that's worked well for you. Any tips on like how you're able to, because that's a pretty niche.
It is.
Any tips as a great Meta ads expert on what worked to target that in terms of the actual targeting and the messaging in the ads?
Oh, we're big on video. We got a couple other Dirt World guys here in Seven Figure Agency. I think we're all in agreement on that, that for a lot of the contractor space, but especially in ours, video's big. Mm-hmm. And I say this, you know, when I'm helping other marketing agency guys think through some of this stuff, I tell them the same thing. Like the talking head model that was big on TikTok now works on all platforms, right? Mm-hmm. Facebook Reels, YouTube Shorts. There's this model where it's like, it's okay to have a framed vertical video of you talking, but don't just talk at the camera, like talk about results. So all of our ads now, we do a lot of like, I've edited in quick, like, I mean, hey, how does a $1.2 million job sound, right? Like this guy up here, and then I show a quick snapshot of the job they landed or their logo. And so there's like social proof, like within the first 2 to 3 seconds. And then I'm, you know, these guys. We've also got video ads now where we've literally just taken video testimonies and turned them into ads. Like we just let them talk. Like your best salesperson are your clients more than your own company, right? Like I'm always telling my sales guy, like you got to start outperforming our clients because they're killing it for you right now. So yeah, we've got some of those, and we're pumping a lot of video creatives into ads, and it's just been working, and then cycling them out. If it's getting old, you know, we're putting new ones in, but we don't really use graphics anymore or still images. It's all video, and they don't have to be long. Some are long, some are short, but we just take our best performing ones and really just go after it with case studies. And if it's me, the talking head, I'm still talking about case studies, and we just let that sell.
Got it. All right. So it's like almost a VSL style, you know, quick hook, you know, like selfie style, you talking, and bringing in some graphics. And then are you doing a lead form, or are you taking them to a landing page? What, like in your model, what's worked best?
Yeah. So for us, we do lead form with conditional logic. And the conditional logic is if they're at a certain revenue point or below, it disqualifies them. If it's they have like four options on revenue choices. So three of them are good, one of them's bad. If you pick the bad one, sorry, you get the, hey, we're just not a good fit. It's just not going to work, right? And then the top three ones, they move forward into our funnel. So they come in to go high level. The appointment setter we have sees it. She jumps on it within 5 minutes and is on a phone call with them, doing another level of qualification questions or whatever. You know, we're spending $10,000 to $12,000 a month on Facebook ad spend. And so we're getting in front of thousands of these guys, and we get hundreds of leads coming in. And we found early on that if we didn't qualify them at the ad level, it was filling up our pipeline, which was kind of fun at first, but then like having 8 sales meetings a day that were booked, and most of them either didn't show up or showed up and had no money. It was a mess. And quickly we were like, we've got to do something different where we qualify them at that ad level before they even come in. And then when they come in, the appointment setter can really make sure they're a good fit, not just financially, but are you the right industry? Can we really help you? And then book the demo call with our salesperson or with myself. That's kind of our sales funnel.
super helpful. You know, straight into high level, straight into text message and phone call, speed to lead, lots of heavy filtering on the front end to kind of clean up the noise.
Yeah.
When it comes to the actual targeting, are you open targeting and letting your video call out the audience? Are you custom lookalike audiences to try and get to these guys? How do you have that structured today?
Oh man, I'm loving the new feature from Meta. Just let it go.
Let it roll.
I tested both, and just putting no audience has way outperformed when I created my own audiences. So
thank you,
Meta, for figuring that out. But the good news is not only it's helping all these agency owners, I think, because now you don't have, that was like the hardest part, was really figuring out like, who do I target where I'm not too tight, but too wide, and they've got more data points than we do, right? Like they know who you're really trying to reach. And so we just make sure that in the text portion and in the videos that we are calling out our ideal client and then letting them figure that part out from there.
So that's a really important announcement for those of you that maybe have been studying older Facebook ads trainings, or you're kind of testing this out and you're like, well, I always thought the best thing to do was to really customize the audience or load up a list and then do lookalikes. And while that worked maybe like 2 years ago, in today's market, the best thing you can do is open your audience,
and
the fact that you're using lead forms like you do closes the loop easily, right? So that Meta is very easily understanding, okay, he's saying land clearing in the text and on the video, and then people are actually scheduling appointments and they can try and get more of that for you.
Right. And the other thing we've done is, let's say they come in through the ad, they hit that lead form and they submit it. At the end, we have them, instead of just doing a generic thank you page, we actually take them to one more booking page. And on that booking page, it's a quick video from me, heavy emphasis on check out all these case study videos below. And if you're ready to just take action, go ahead and fill out this booking form. You can jump right into a sales meeting, so that it's not just a thank you and we're just wait and see what happens, but they have the option to really take action if they want.
I love that. I would imagine your follow-up sequence after the fact through high level is driving them to that with go ahead and schedule in addition to you picking up the phone. Super helpful. I think if you're listening to this and you're getting value, just drop a like. Because I think this is great stuff. So we talked about how you pivoted and you said, okay, I'm going to go after land clearing companies. Talk a little bit about what the client acquisition strategy is that's working well for you today. Let's talk a little bit about packaging. I see a question here from Zachary, who's on with us live. Zachary, great to have you here. And he's just asking, what is it that you do for these clients? How do you package it?
Yeah. So we have three packages now. We were doing two for a while. And we no longer sell individual services. Now, if someone wants to talk us down, like, hey, I'm telling you, that's all I want. Okay, sure, we'll do that. As long as it's one of our actual offerings. Often, most of the time, 90 to 95% of the time, we're doing a package deal. So for us, a lot of our guys in our industry don't even have websites. You know, they're like, these guys show up to sales meetings with dirt on their face. You know, they're like owner operators who are out in a machine all day. They're not really tech savvy guys. So for us, we have our growth package, dominate package, elite package. Our growth package has a $2,000 setup fee and a $2,000 a month management fee. That includes, in the setup fee, that includes a new website, new map listing. Even if they have a website, hey, you get one like this. Because oftentimes if they even did have a website, usually they're not great anyway. And we don't want to try to do a remodel job. We want to build it fast, quick, efficient, the way we like it. And then we offer four services at that base package. You get SEO, one ad platform. It's either Google Ads or Facebook Ads, whichever one we think is a better fit, depending on location and service type offering. You get website hosting, and then you get the Go High Level sub account. Everybody who comes through is getting a Go High Level sub account. Just like, we've got to help our clients, even with the sales side of things, close more jobs, answer the phone or respond if you're going to miss the call. Like that, we've just got to have that in place. So that, and then all the way up to our elite package, $2,000 setup fee, $6,000 a month comes with everything you can think of, plus some AI automations. It'll come with an in-person videography media day. We'll fly out to them and do videos. And why we do that is we get to talk strategy. They get to meet with the owner of their marketing agency for lunch. We take them out. And then we also are going to grab a bunch of video and B-roll and stuff. So we're going to give that to them for them to use on their social media, which is great. And then we're going to use it on their ads. And then we're also going to capture some case study material, right? Can't leave without case study. So yeah, they got a couple of things there at that level that we give them, but no contracts for us. We don't do contracts on anything. We are month to month. So my whole team knows that we have got 30 days to make them happy. We've got to produce results. So that's also why we don't just offer SEO by itself, because they won't see results fast enough. So SEO with Facebook ads, though, we can get leads within the first week or two coming in. And then it's like a race to make sure that it's enough that they're closing jobs. And then all of our retention efforts that they're really being communicated with regularly, especially month one, it's every single week. So
super good. So between $2,000 and $6,000 plus ad spend, I think was what I heard. Is that right?
Plus ad spend, yeah.
And it's okay, website, SEO, local SEO, and then one of the paid ads platforms.
Yeah.
I'm curious, in your market, is it typically Facebook ads that's winning, or is it local service ads and Google ads? Or like you said, I know it's different from one market to the next.
Yeah, LSA is not really a thing yet for most of our areas for our guys. I know like plumbers, electricians, that it is, but it's not for the dirt world guys really. So we don't really do a whole lot of LSA. We will look to see if it is available because some of our guys do occasionally have access to it. And if they do, then great, we'll add that in. Oftentimes it's Facebook ads for our dirt world guys. They are killing it on the Facebook ad. I've also found for our guys, I would say, I know some don't always agree with me on this, but what I've seen is the southern states do really, really well on Facebook ads, and the northern states tend to do a little bit better on Google ads. I don't know why we've seen that, but it's just been working out that way, that lead flow just is stronger depending on which side of the U.S. you're on. I wouldn't like die on that hill or whatever, and we try to move them into like our middle package, which is all the above. You're going to get Google ads and Facebook ads and SEO, right? So we're going to do all of it, but Facebook ads is a really fast, quick one. And the reason I love Facebook ads for this industry is it's fun to watch machines doing machine things. Like, who doesn't like
your eye? I got the equipment already, right? So it's like, you're going to see it and you're going to interact with it.
Right. You know, if a realtor selling a house is kind of like, okay, there's a dude at a house, but man, seeing a giant yellow machine doing like crazy stuff moving earth is just exciting to see. Doesn't matter whether you're in the niche or not, right?
So good. All right. So thanks for breaking that piece of it down for us. And it seems like you made the strategic decision that I would recommend pretty much any agency do, is go multi-channel. Don't just do SEO, but also don't just do Facebook ads. It's a combination for some reason that kind of gives you more leverage points to actually generate the result. Not because you're tying them to you, but because you're like, you know that the SEO is going to pick up organic rankings and that's going to drive some organic flow and a low cost per lead. But you've also got the speed of execution of launching some type of paid strategy. And that is going to drive better results. It's going to drive more sticky clients, and it's going to drive better retention.
Absolutely. And I do think marketing agencies, where we have to be thinking forward thinking, is marketing has to be a holistic approach. It's like, we're not just SEOs who love to do rankings on Google and get you some Google leads. It's just that's 10 years ago. Like, where we're at now is we've got to be found everywhere. Our clients have to be found everywhere. And with the increase of AI searching going on and all the AI results, you really do have to be everywhere. So we're having convos with some of our clients about how do we get you on Reddit, and not just on it, but active in it, where you're actually getting really good engagement. How can we help you with that? I mean, there and just a number of those things that we're working through now with our clients and coaching them on their sales side. Mm-hmm. Like, there's, even though we hand it off to them, we don't qualify. We found that the guys who are terrible at sales cancel on us because we don't have contracts. So we need to help them figure out and put all the tools in place, but also teach them how to do better at sales. So I'm actually working on our book right now, and I'm actually in that sales chapter. I'm helping them just not with marketing, but sales, how you answer the phone and why you should answer and how quick you should answer and stuff like that.
I love that. I'm glad you brought that back up, because you've taken it beyond just we're going to do website and paid ads to we're also going to help you convert those leads into book jobs and into revenue. And I think the fact that you've set up high level and you bake that into your overall program is awesome. What have you found to work best to get compliance from your contractors to actually, you know, follow up with the leads, let the automations purr, and hopefully, I don't know, are they closing the loop on their jobs like this was qualified and it booked? Or like, how do you think about that whole cycle?
Yeah, so we've got our account managers calling every week. We don't just do a monthly email. Here's what we did this month. We're calling every week and the account manager says, hey, Jim Bob, I see that a Mary Jane called you on Monday at 3:00. How did that call go? What did you quote her? Did you close it? Yes or no, right? And why that's helpful is now they're seeing in their own system, whether it be Go High Level, or we also use What Converts, they're seeing now their quote values and their sales values for the month. And then we internally are being able to see, are we producing an ROI or not? And not just on sale values. That's why I would encourage marketers also look at quote values, not just what they sold, but also what they quoted. We had we have a client today. It was in our client success channel. He gave out $807,000 in quotes this month, right? And so we were able to show him, hey, you paid us $3,500 this month. You quoted $800,000. You closed 100 of that already. So is there an ROI? Or why would you cancel on us? It makes zero sense, right? So instead of just, we barely talked about the lead flow. We talked about quote value and revenue value from the marketing and just the overall ROI. So every week our account managers are trained to go in and look at each one of their leads and call and check. Now we ask them to do that. But like you said, like, what's the buy-in like? I mean, a lot of these guys just don't. And I think they're getting to a point where some of them just kind of like it. They're like, oh, it feels like I've got an assistant now who's going to call and check on my numbers. And I'm still trying to work through that because I don't want our account managers to be everyone's assistant. But at this point, we've got to be tracking that to make sure that what we're doing is working and that they see real value in what we're offering.
So good. And that's why you've had the growth that you have and the fact that you care that much about the client, that it's not like, hey, I just did my thing and that's it. Like, I did my thing and I'm holding your hand. To make sure not only do you see the value and perceive it, but you actually get the return on investment. So logistically, it sounds like, you know, you got the website, you're getting some organic traffic from that. You're tracking phone calls and then you're tracking the lead forms that probably are coming in on Facebook ads, dropping them into a pipeline on a high level, and then putting some type of follow-up speed to lead piece in place for the clients and the customers that they get. And then your team is looking at, hey, you had 19 leads. It sounds like, you know, these were five that you were dispatched on. Do you do calendar management through the platform for them? Or is it mainly just, you got a lead, and then I want to know, like, did you get a call booked, and then did you actually get the job?
Yeah, it's that second part. We're not at that place yet, because that's where I think we start, and we might, we're still figuring that out. Do we want to go that far, where we're also managing their calendar on that? But we use the calendar to see what they've booked, what they've not. We also are tracking from the analytics side, just calls, lead forms, texts, outbound calls instead of just inbound calls. So that we can see who are the guys who are most active and then who are the guys who are the least active. And then we usually can see a parallel there. The ones who are most active and the ones who are calling quickly, answering their phones, are the ones who are most successful. So it's not just about who got the most leads from us, but who are the ones who are on their side, on their sales sides, killing it. And that's how we can kind of track, you know. And then we use that to educate more of our clients and potential customers. We take that info, we can make YouTube videos over on our channel and talk about, hey, here's what we're noticing as a company who works with dozens and dozens of people in this industry. Here are the ones who are most successful financially. And it's not just because they're paying for marketing, right? Like, that's just a baseline. They got marketing, great. But now, what are they doing with that marketing? So we're trying to track that and communicate that and educate these guys. A lot of education.
Yeah, super smart. Great, great stuff. Zachary did have a follow-up question here. And Zachary, thanks for engaging. If you've got questions and you're on with us live, drop them in. We'll do our best to answer. He's saying, can you give me an idea of the average Meta cost per lead that you're seeing in your industry?
Is that for inbound for our agency or for our clients?
Both. I think both would be helpful if you have it.
Yeah. Facebook leads, and again, depends on, are we land clearing, excavation, demolition, right? But in general, Facebook leads are about around $20 to $40, $20 to $35 per lead. For them, Google ads are producing anywhere between $85 to $250 leads. But we did an audit recently on one of our top clients and determined that one out of four of their Google leads converted into a paying job, whereas one out of 14 of their Facebook leads converted into a paying job. So the customer acquisition cost was actually pretty close, but it came down to, which do you prefer? Do you want to have more calls that you're going to be chasing? Some of our guys who are sales oriented, I'll turn anything into a dollar. Let's go. But then we have some other guys who are smaller. They're like, I'm in a machine. I don't have time to be working hundreds of leads. Just give me the ones who are most qualified. I don't mind that the cost is a little bit higher. So we have to educate them sometimes on that. Like, this is going to be more costly, but you know, you're going to make it work. So that's on the client side. I would say for our agency, when we didn't qualify our leads, we were getting $7-$8 leads. And now that we're qualifying them, we're getting between $20 and $40 leads qualified for our own inbound agency. And so then we can reverse engineer that and figure out, all right, what's our ad spend got to be to get enough of those, which will then result in enough booked calls, which will then result in enough sales.
So good. Thanks for sharing those numbers. And for those of you listening, I hope that one thing you're picking up as you're listening to Josh is that he knows his numbers and he down to the metrics, how much are we spending? What's our average cost per lead? What's our average cost per booking? What's our cost to acquire a customer? He knows these numbers. And in terms of what he delivers for his clients, he's not using the cop-out like, hey, we generated 112 leads for you and that's my only job is I'm making the phone ring and you got to convert it. The reason he's doing so well and the reason he's retaining the way that he is because he is getting involved and he's tracking those metrics. And that makes him indispensable to the clients that he serves. So it's an opportunity if you're not doing that today, to level up your thinking, level up your tracking, which is going to be a, you know, better result for your client and better result for your own agency.
Right. And that, you know, the big question we ask our clients, and I think even us as agency owners, we have to ask ourselves, or is what makes us unique, right? That's a selling point we talk about in advertising all the time, no matter who you are. What makes me unique and different from the other 10 guys that that company might reach out to? And so as an agency owner, that has to be one of the things that can set us apart, is that our hands-on involvement is just, is light years ahead of what just a regular marketing agency is doing, who's just doing lead gen, right? I generate leads through one or two channels. There you go. Hope it works. And I'm saying that as a guy who did that. I was that guy. And that's why our retention sucked. I thought, I can't believe I even said this, but I used to tell people, well, yeah, I think our clients like us like a Netflix subscription. I don't need to hear from my Netflix rep, right? I just want the service to work and just leave me alone. And I thought our clients wanted that. But man, I was wrong. Like I've learned from doing it now, being on this other side, going, you know what? Actually, they prefer that. Now, of course, you're gonna have some that are like, you know, hey, I'm busy, man. We don't have time to talk. And our account managers, we have a whole system where we track that, you know, the star system, right? I think I learned it from another agency owner in here. 1 star, 2 star, 3 star in terms of handholding. But the ones who really like it, there's a good chunk of them, even in our Dirt World agency, our Dirt World clients that really want to hear from you regularly. So
love it. So let's shift gears. We've talked a little bit about how you land clients. We've talked about what the program looks like. Let's talk about delivery. You know, now with $115,000 or so in monthly recurring revenue, that's a lot of clients, right? To build websites for and to run ads for. And talk to us a little bit about what the delivery model looks like in your business and how you've scaled that.
Yeah. So when we were all white label for the longest time. It was just the easiest thing to do. And then as we crossed the million mark at that 83K mark, I started looking at our numbers, realizing we're spending a lot of money at this size on white labelers. So since crossing that threshold, we have been removing all of our white labelers. We're down to our last two positions we're interviewing right now. That'll be completely now all in-house. And the other reason we wanted to do it was not just cost, but now that we are hyper-focused on retention and deliverables, we realized we didn't have as much control on those white labelers. Because before it was like, we hired them just to get results, right? But now we want to go beyond that, not just get results, but like stellar results. And you just can't control that with white labels. So we moved it all in-house for that. And so our process has been much stronger. We use ClickUp to manage all of our processes. I have a stinking amazing operations manager. She's light years ahead of me on organization of skills. She runs the team. There's times where I'm like, wait, what are we doing again? She's like teaching me and informing me, this is what we do now. I'm like, oh yeah, you're right. My bad. So having an internal team that is strong and organized, and then a clear like plan of action for everything we do, and then clear communication pathways for that, has just made the process faster and stronger.
Awesome. I mean, for those of you at, you know, 40, 50, 60,000 in monthly recurring revenue, don't feel like you have to bring it in-house right away. It sounds like Josh grew to seven figures, right? And it was like, I'm going to do what I do. I'm going to focus on, you know, getting the clients and the tracking and the relationship. And I'm going to not have to focus on delivery. But now he's taken in-house. If in retrospect, like if you could do it again, would you have brought in-house sooner? Or do you feel like this was the right move for you?
Yeah, maybe a little sooner. I think what happens based on some of the combos I've had with other marketing agency owners is that if you are really good at sales and then you move real fast, you're closing a lot and you don't really have a strong system in place, you don't have SOPs, you don't really know what's needed for those deliverables, trying to bring somebody or a couple of players in inside causes just a lot of chaos and a mess. And so one of the lessons that we've learned, and we heard this from others and we've adopted it from the get-go, was figure out your SOPs first and then hire for those SOPs. Don't try and hire somebody, bring them in, and then ask them to figure out the SOP for you, because what you thought you were hiring may not be the right fit. And maybe their SOP isn't really a good fit at all. So that was a good word of caution to us that we adopted early on. But that took us a lot of figuring out, okay, well, what is our SOP? How do we, in terms of our SEO program, how are we going to do that? In terms of the way we run ads, how do we want to make that work? And then started figuring, all right, how do we replace these white labels so that we can do that? Because now we have a strong system in place. The other thing I'd say too for us was, I wouldn't have done it if I had to keep being the ops person. Because I'm handling sales all day long, and then I'm trying to run the whole team as well. That was going to be a quick mess too. So my first hire was an account manager, and who's now my ops manager. She was my first hire as an account manager, saw that she was killing it in that role. And then as we brought on more stuff, it was like, hey, you need to be our full-blown ops manager. And she's been great moving into that role. And then it gave me the confidence to say, all right, are we ready? I have that combo with her all the time. Are you ready for the next stage? Are you ready for the next hires? If you're not, then let's pump the brakes. We'll keep, white label's fine, but when you're ready, because you've got everything under control and smooth, you know, I always call it like all cylinders, all eight cylinders running, and there's no squeaky wheel, there's no weird knocking noise, then we'll bring on the next hire. And so we've gone through, I mean, going from three employees to 13 in 1 year, is there's been a lot of change and a lot of like, are you sure you're ready? Are you okay? And we both like sometimes like, high five, you go that way, I'll go this way. You're training those guys, I'm training sales side over here, and we're going to figure it out. And then we'll just check back in on each other. So I think there are some parts that, depending on your personality, your skill set, that would dictate whether you should do it sooner or later.
Yeah. So I think that's great perspective for, you know, for the agencies that are listening. Either they've got it in-house today and they're like, man, maybe I've overburdened myself, or they're trying to think about making that transition. I do find most agencies, when they get to, you know, especially when you get to like 60, 70,000 or more, economies of scale, you know, in terms of like the cost to produce make much more financial sense. But the biggest driver is, if you want to be the best in your space and you want to be innovating and you want to be like on the cutting edge, that's hard to get from a white label provider, right? You can really own the production when you bring it in house. And that helps confidence, it helps sales process, it helps retention and everything else.
Right. Yep. Yeah. When you're in the beginning stages, you're like, I'm just trying to sell. I'm just trying to get some clients on here and make them happy with some results. Then it's like, yeah, white label it all day. What we found was white labeling, the pro was that I could scale sales then. I really was able to just really hammer sales all day long and then just turn around and hand them off to like experts out there. And that was great. But until it got to a certain size, and then it was like, wait a minute. We've got enough internal stuff that we really should start moving this back in here. So yeah, totally agree.
Great insight. So now we've got a team, right? And we've got a team of people that are focused on this day in and day out. Talk to us about the organizational chart and kind of like, is it US based? Is it international? Is it virtual? Yeah. Is it in an office?
Yeah, that's great. Great question. We are half US and half Philippines. Okay. And one Canadian, my sales guy's up in Canada who actually lives in Belarus, and it's a whole thing, but he's awesome. He was just talking about Southern accents today. He's like, I can't quite figure this Southern accent thing. I was like, you're going to have to figure it out. A lot of Southerners like to get on the phone in the dirt world industry.
In the dirt world, for sure. So
we've got, everyone's remote and we communicate daily through ClickUp. We're very task oriented, right? Project oriented. So we don't track hours. We track performance. We just track deliverables. Are you getting the stuff that we think you should be able to do in 1 week knocked out? And if it's not, then let's have a combo, right? Anybody that is client facing is American. Anybody who does work that's not client facing has been in the Philippines for us. So, and that's just how it's just worked out that way for us. And it's just made more sense financially to do a blend. So yeah, that's our setup.
Excellent. So to walk us through the key position. So obviously you're the visionary, like what are the other key roles or leadership, you know, layers that you have in your agency?
Yeah. So right now we've got me at the top, and then we have our operations manager. Operations manager has right now two account managers, two SEOs. We're hiring right now for the two ad specialists, one go high level specialist. And then on my side, I also handle sales. So I've got the appointment setter and our business development manager, our sales guy. So we've kind of split it that she's got all operations. I've got all sales and marketing. And I'm handling the marketing as well and stuff for the podcast and all that other stuff. And it's worked so far. The next step will be taking the account management and having like the onboarding specialist role, who just kind of oversees that whole side, so that we don't have 10 reports all going to my ops manager, but we start having some mid-level and she can shrink it down. As of last week, my ops manager was finally able to hand off the last of her clients, so that she doesn't oversee any direct contact with clients. We have account managers to do that now exclusively, so that she is freed up truly to just meet with each one of our staff members and make sure that everything's firing on all eight cylinders. And that's it.
Super good. So seven figures, growing quickly, mostly virtual team, or completely virtual team, but you know, kind of a mix.
Remote everywhere. Yeah.
Remote team. Sounds like Slack, ClickUp, and Zoom interaction. Any cool things that you had done from a cultural perspective, being that you got the Philippine team, the US team, keeping everybody in sync and feeling like part of the family?
Yeah, a couple of things that we do. There's some things I'm still working on that I want to do. Like I've seen people use like those fun game days and stuff like that. Mm. I've looked at in-person stuff, trying to figure that out. Something that was really, really important to me was making sure that any of our full-time, basically, if you work here, you're part of this team. Like I really want that culture. And especially if you're full-time, like we really want you. I don't care if you're in a different country or not. You get all the same benefits that all of our Americans do. I really did not want to create this feeling of, oh, we're virtual assistants and there's the real employees over there. That's so a couple of things we did was one, everyone's face is on our social media. Everyone's face is on our website or about to be on our website. I don't care who you are. You're on our team. You're the team. Another one we've done is we've got this from Brad Starnes, the 1% revenue share program. So if you're full-time, whether you're overseas or here, you have access to our 1% rev share program. So every 6 months, when we hit a milestone that we've set, it unlocks 1% for the whole team. And the whole team shares it based on their, everybody gets a certain amount of tokens. So like some positions have more tokens, some have less, based on experience and role responsibilities and time frame you've been with the company. But however many tokens you've got equals a certain dollar amount. And so everybody gets that. And so it's something that you can tell. Even some of our Filipino employees have said, like, thank you for this. Like, no one's ever done that. Other places I've worked at have never treated us this way. And so I really like that. Looking forward to it. We're about to hit June, our first one, and we're on track to hit it. And I can't wait to give it to them. And another one that we've done is in ClickUp, we have a client success channel that all employees, part-time, full-time, go into. And it's big for us. I know a lot of agencies do it, but for us, like I've really made it a key, not just for social media purposes and marketing purposes, but I want every member of our team to see that even if you're doing a repetitive task that feels, oh, I'm not one of those upper positions, I'm one of these, everything that you did, plus them, plus all of us, has contributed to the success of our clients. Mm-hmm. And so every time our clients win, we want to post it in there so that the whole team, all staff are in that, can celebrate. And then I've made it kind of a cultural thing that I'm celebrating all the time. I'm celebrating over my staff, anything they're doing, anything that's worth celebrating, we celebrate. And I'll do it personally with each one. And now this kind of cultural thing that even my ops manager, I'll see her do it. Like, hey, I loved that you said that. I love that you did great doing this. I love that you cared about fixing this for our client. You're killing it. You're doing a great job. Like just creating a culture of praise instead of like the machine. You know, we just day in, day out. I feel like that's how you burn out people. I've been in positions in the past where I've had, you know, upward of 200 employees before when I was working government, and I've worked other places too. And I hate that kind of culture. I didn't even want to be there for those kind of cultures. And I just thought with my own business, I really wanted to be a place that I genuinely get excited about working at and that others do. And I get it. Nobody's going to love your business like you are. And I get that. So there, you know, if some of them have side hustles, they're like, great, go do your thing. But if you're working here, I want you to love it. I want you to really, really love working here and feel like I don't want to go anywhere. So when I hear an employee say, I don't care if the world catches on fire, I'm not leaving this place. I'm like, yes, like that's what I'm wanting. That's what I'm trying to create here. So we've worked real hard on that. Keep working real hard on that. I'm always looking for new ways to strengthen that.
No, I love that. I think there's three things you said there that are really impactful that I hope everybody made note of. First of all, everybody on the team, regardless if they're in the Philippines or Canada or like in your backyard, is a full member of the team with respect. Invited to the meetings, and they're not just a VA, right? You treat them like a VA, they're going to show up like a VA.
Right, exactly.
Super powerful. Number two is sharing those wins and the culture of winning, what you focus on expands. And so it's like, if you're focused on getting the client's ROI and growing their business, share that. Get the whole team excited about that. That gives them a reason beyond the paycheck to stick around. And then number three, I think probably the most impactful for a lot of us is we always struggle, like if the company's growing and you've had massive growth, that's great for me. How do you get the rest of the team excited about that and bought into that? And so the whole idea of some type of profit share, now they're seeing the company grow and they're happy for you. They're happy for the company, but they're also like, hey, that's going to impact my money, even if it's not a huge amount because 1% divided amongst the entire team, but it's telling them you appreciate their contribution. Yeah. And as the company wins, they're going to win as well.
Yeah, that was a big one because I kept thinking, you know, I've been a part-time employee before. I've been an hourly person before. And, you know, companies love to talk about, hey, these are our revenue goals and here's where we're going sales-wise and retention-wise. And okay, I'm going to get the same paycheck whether I work hard or work, you know, lazy. It's, you know, I'm just going to show up and do me. Why do I care about the company? And so I always thought, that makes sense. Why would I expect it any differently of my employees? So I was like, they've got to have something that motivates them. And the truth is, a lot of business coaching and stuff will teach you like, money isn't really the primary motivator, right? There's mm-hmm. there's stuff when it's beyond you, when you feel like you're part of something bigger than yourself, that's really a bigger motivator. But money is a big, like, close second, right? Like, so they want to. And so I've told our staff, like, you know, there are going to be some days, not all the time, but there may be a Friday where you're like, it's 4 or 5 o'clock. I know another thing just came in for me to do, but I'm calling it a day. And I want there to be that little thing that you go, yeah, I'm willing to put in just that little extra hump when I don't feel like it. Because, and what is that thing? And so that's why that rev share program came into place, was like, I want them to think like, yeah, if we could just push a little bit more beyond my hourly or my project-based tasks, that would get someone excited to do a little bit more. I was like, we got to figure that out. Brad Starnes did a great job sharing that. And I was like, oh, I jumped on that. I was like, that's what I've been looking for. Yes, give me the details. So we put
so
it in.
Good. So good shout out to him. And yeah. Cliff Notes, because there are a million ways to structure rev share or profit sharing. Mm-hmm. Just give us the Cliff Notes. I know you mentioned it's 1% and it was like every 6 months, but logistically, how does that work? If somebody wanted to try and do something similar, or maybe you can point to Brad and say, hey, like, he's got the details here.
Right. So there's profit share and there's rev share, right? So profit share is more beneficial to the owner because it's after taxes and everything that's paid out, but it's less of a win to your employees. They're kind of like, oh, okay, well, after you've paid everybody, and how do we know you didn't pay yourself even more this month, right? They can come up with all these excuses. And revenue share is better for the employees and not as strong for you because it's 1% gross. So you're like,
even if you had a negative profit month, like, you know, that's 1%, right?
That's going to hurt. But in my brain was, if it's based on performance as well. So every 6 months we have a milestone that we're shooting for. So our next one is at 120. So we're at 118. Like, they have till June to hit $2,000 more a month. And then it unlocks it. As long as by the end of June, we're still at 120 or above, it unlocks it. And then 6 more months, we've got a new milestone. So to me, it just makes, I'm like, if we're hitting the milestone, then we're profitable, right? So it's not on a bad month. It's technically based on good months continuing to climb. And so why wouldn't I want to do that? And the other cool part is that, cool part for my employees, not as the business owner, but it is that, it, you know, after 2, 3, 4 years, let's say we get to 4, 5, 6, 7 million. Now all of a sudden that is a chunk of change. 1% right. being split up, that, you know, even like somebody who may be way down the totem pole is getting like a $1,500 check or a $2,000 check. And your top line employees are getting like a $3,000, $4,000, $5,000 check. So it can really stack where it's really exciting for some of our employees. And I think they love that idea too, that this isn't just the same number every time, but hey, as we keep growing, and yeah, you hit a milestone, but what if we hit the next milestone and then the next one? Then, man, we're going to keep unlocking and unlocking and unlocking. And you guys, I mean, it's, praise God. Yes, y'all earned it. Get it, take it. Go buy yourself something fun. Go do something fun with that.
Super helpful. I love that. And I love the spirit behind it and how it solves that question of like, how do we get the team bought in? How do we get them excited about this? And we're all winning as this company grows and we hit new milestones. Let's talk a little bit about retention. So you mentioned struggling with retention and now like really getting things dialed in. Talk to us about some of the things you've put in place that have impacted that ability to retain at a higher level.
Yeah. So we went into the program and was like, all right, what are we not doing? And then I thought, I feel like we're doing everything right. I don't know why retention is not great. Come to find out, no, we're not. So the big change was really the level of communication ramped up. So it used to be, I think we were probably what a lot of regular marketing agencies do, where it's just like at the end of the month, I send an email report. And, you know, if you didn't check it, no worries. We'll be here. Just please send your invoice, right? Mm-hmm. So what we changed was the onboarding is where it starts, right? Like, obviously it starts with sales, but then at onboarding, we do a really smooth handoff. And our ops manager and that account manager who's going to take this client on both meet with that new client and they do introductions, they walk through a bunch of stuff and they have a really good onboarding session. And then we set clear expectations and here, get ready. You're about to hear from us pretty soon. And then the ops manager and the account manager communicate, especially on that first month, or sometimes we go 6 weeks for every single week. And so they're checking in here and just feel, even if there's not a whole lot to report, hey, your website's almost done, or hey, it's time for a review, or it's whatever, right? So it's weekly touch points the way they like, whether it's a phone call or text. And then when their first lead comes in, we call. Even if they did a touch point 2 days ago, we're calling when that first lead comes in. A couple of reasons. One, we're just on it, right? They like it. But two, we're also making sure that everything's connected properly. Like, did you get that lead? So now we know all the way from their ads through their system, made it to their inbox, right? So that's part of it. And then monthly, we do a video meeting with them. but weekly. So let's say after that first month's over, there's still going to be weekly phone calls just to check on leads, how they're doing, like how did you, what'd you quote, all that stuff. But we still do a monthly meeting where we get on a video meeting just like this. So their account manager and the client will meet, and then they'll go over just, all right, for the month. It doesn't have to be a long one, especially if they've been talking weekly. Just here's what we covered. Here's what we did. Here are things we've proactively been looking for, not just reactively, like, oh, things haven't been going well. Lead flow's down. Now let's make some change. I tell the account managers, you got to be looking for opportunities to strengthen. Like, go after, go find stuff that we could improve. Don't wait around. And so they'll share that in that time period. And then they'll give them sometimes some homework. We're like, hey, you need some more reviews. Here's the link for you to, and we'll put it in your go high level for you, but just be thinking about asking for reviews and things like that. So that's been a big part of it. We've switched language around from just lead flow. Like, hey, we've done marketing services and here's your lead flow, to everything we're doing, which isn't just lead flow, but here's what the revenue looks like. Here's the ROI on this. So kind of a mindset shift. And that's all gone all the way down to our sales. So now at the sales level, even we've changed where we no longer sell services, but we sell outcomes. And we don't sell outcomes just, hey, you're getting a lot of leads from these services, but the outcomes are our people are making 5x ROI, 10x ROI. There's $1 million contract that just went out for one guy. Hey, there's a 4 million. We just had one of our clients just did $100 million bid, one lead that came in from our SEO. And been waiting to get him on the podcast. I'm like, come on, did you close?
Yeah,
like,
come on, right.
But like helping people to see that everything we're doing is helping tie all that together so that they see values. Retention has been all of that. Heavy amount of communication, really strong onboarding process, and then tying in results at the end, not just lead flow or services rendered.
So good. So it sounds like dialing in the onboarding, really increasing the frequency, right? Rather than, you know, hey, look, we're going to reactively send this report. And if they ask, great. If not, no news is good news. But really just getting out in front of it.
That's
hey, here's what's going on. Here's the outcomes. And then taking accountability. And that's not just like, hey, theoretically, that's going to help your retention. In your world, you've seen that tangibly have a big impact on retention.
Huge. Yeah. Right. The rate went up. And then we tracked it, right? So like that was another big one. I never really tracked any of that stuff. Mm. I just go off feeling. I was like, thank you. You know, we're just... MRR was the only thing I was looking at. And it's like, then I started really like, all right, what's the actual show up rate this week, this month, right? What's our book rate for demo? What's our close rate? What's all of that stuff? Then we could figure out, is this a marketing issue for us? Is this a, appointment setter problem? Is this a salesperson problem? And now on the account manager side, retention efforts. Now we're tracking revenue retention. We're also tracking number of client retention. We actually have both numbers that we're looking at all times. And I've incentivized our account managers. They make money. They make money for hitting quarterly retention goals. So if they can maintain a 95% and above for 3 months in a row, they get a bonus, $500 bonus. They get bonuses for getting 5-star reviews from our clients. They get another bonus, a bigger bonus for every video testimony they bring in. And they get a sales commission off of upsells into additional packages and services. Doing heavy amounts of like incentivizing for the operation side too, not just sales side. So that they're thinking like this, like, man, I want to do a stellar job on my side. Everybody has incentives financially for everything they do, whether it's the rev share program or sales, obviously, but even retention side, they make money doing everything they do. So just really ramped up all of that. And it was like, oh, look, the numbers are increasing. Like, wow, look at that. It works. So
good. What you measure gets done, right? And like what you measure always improves. So you're like, well, I got to measure the retention. I got to measure those things. You got that dialed in, which is huge. Incentivizing the account managers. One thing you said that I really loved was not just incentivizing the retention, but incentivizing taking that client from a client to a champion, right? When a client comes on and does a testimonial for you, they go from just being a client to being an advocate, which obviously is good for your marketing, but it also justifies your entire organization, right? Because you're really helping people win. You're helping people get the outcomes that they're after. And that's not like a byproduct of like, hey, we did good work. Yeah. It's intentional. We're going to do such a great job that we want you to jump on Zoom with us and be a client testimonial or whatever it is, the methodology for you that the whole team can rally around, makes you more interesting from a marketing perspective. And interestingly, when you get somebody that steps out in that way, they become more likely to stay with you long-term as well. So lots of really cool insights that you shared, just kind of unpacking your retention strategy.
Yeah. Another one I asked them to do is be on the lookout for our next podcast guest. So if they're seeing a client that's succeeding or saying a lot of positive things, include them into it. Like, they have the option to tell them right now, hey, Josh would love to have you on the podcast. They don't even have to ask my permission. Just go get them. And then here's the link to go ahead and book that. And then if they can't get them that quickly, then let me know. We have a channel for that. I'll jump on and get a call or text, whatever. We found that if we can get them good results and then get them a case study out of them and or a podcast guest, then man, their retention really sticks, because now they've built a relationship with me and with their account manager and the ops manager. And they're, so even on a slow month, like if we've had some of these guys like, hey, it's been a kind of a rough month, man, they're in, they're not going anywhere. They'll even say, like, it's almost like they give you grace for a couple of months if things are slipping. But someone who just barely knows you doesn't care. It's like, they're off to the next shiny thing. So right. All of that all plays together in retention.
So good. So many great insights here on kind of how you've gone from the $43,000 level to the 120. And I know you're going to continue to grow. I have no doubt about that. Willing. Yeah. How you land clients, how you deliver results, how you retain those clients, how you've structured a great team culture. If you had one last piece of advice for that agency owner that is trying to get to the next level, what would that be?
Oh man, I got a lot. One big one that I wish I had started way earlier is the organic side. I know we didn't talk a whole lot about that, but we're heavy on ads, right? But man, I've had to keep scaling my ad spend to keep doing that. We've had some AI leads come in and stuff like that. We're working on that. But, you know, getting the podcast up and running and, you know, working on YouTube channel stuff has been huge. We've had now a number of guys who will say, I found your podcast, listened to it. I really enjoyed it. How do we work with y'all? And I'm like, that wasn't somebody I had to pay for, right? That didn't cost me $40, like on my ad side. And then others have said, like, we did find you through the ads, but then we checked out your podcast and now we're already kind of pre-sold before we show up to the meetings. Not that it, I mean, it's a slow burn, right? So especially if you're just growing or getting started, that's harder. But I would say as you're going, whatever your method for inbound leads are, be working on your organic side too. Really be the authority in that space. And especially if you're niched down, it's just that much faster and easier. And so I'm looking forward to having the book and some of the other stuff that we're working on right now to help just solidify that authority piece. I would love to see more. I'd rather double my lead flow from organic and either scale back my ads or just double everything that we're doing and not have to pay for all of that. That'd be a piece of advice I'd give.
So good. I love that. I think more and more people start to come to you pre-positioned to buy. Yeah. And when you combine an aggressive ad strategy, which you have, and you've got dialed in with a great organic strategy, we're doing podcasts and webinars and showing up at the events, people are going to start to come up and they want selfies with you. And they're like, hey, how do I hire you? I don't care how much it costs. And I think you're at that place now, which is pretty awesome.
It was cool. Having the first time I don't do a lot of the sales now because of our sales employee. But when there was that transition where I was still doing it and working all this organic stuff, the first time I had someone show up on video for their demo call and he was like, oh, the Blue Goat Hat guy, like, you're the guy in the videos. And I was like, yeah, I am. I was like, okay, so I guess you watched our videos. Oh, I've seen all your videos, man. I didn't think I'd be meeting with you. And it just felt like, well, this should be easy. Like, that's, I didn't have to start with that guard up with a lot of guys do. So yeah, 100%. That would make life much easier to having a bunch of those guys line up for sales meetings.
So good, man. So many great insights and takeaways. Josh, congratulations on your success.
Thank you.
Thank you for everything you do to serve the seven-figure agency community.
Absolutely. Glad to help.
Thanks for your willingness to come on and share, you know, like just out of the abundance of your mindset. Absolutely. And say, hey, here's what's working for me. Here's how it's flown. If somebody did want to connect with you further, what would be the best way to engage with you?
Yeah, we're landclearinginsights.com, or you can go to my Facebook page. I've got that up all day long. Josh Stockel over there. We can connect and DM me. We can talk. I'm an open book. I'm all about, I remember being in that early stage begging people, even throw, hey, I'll give you a Starbucks gift card if you just give me 20 minutes to pick your brain. And and seeing so many guys not do that. And I struggled with it so badly and I was so desperate. So I just, for me, I'm like, hey, y'all are all more important than me. However I can help serve others, I'm all about that. Reach out and we can talk.
Amazing. Well, thanks, Josh. Thank you for listening or watching today. If you got value, please be sure to hit the like button, hit the subscribe button. And if you got follow-up questions, drop them in the comments. And please do reach out to Josh. If nothing else, just to say, hey, Josh, thanks so much. Congratulations on your success.
Yeah.
Those types of comments go a long ways. So we're going to wrap it up there. Thanks, everyone, watching. And we'll catch you on a future episode of the Seven Figure Agency Podcast.
Sounds good. See y'all.